There we go.
Good to see you.
Yeah, you too. How you guys doing this morning?
Can we move one of those up here for the voice thing?
So how did the screening go for you guys?
I think it went awesome.
Yeah?
It was fun.
Yeah, it was super fun.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen the movie so many times. At this point, it's like, I'll go get a drink down the street when the movie's playing. It was so much fun, I had to say.
Yeah, everybody's having a really good time, so it's kind of nice to, like, hear people laugh where they're supposed to laugh.
What was that Fantastic Fest? Where else have you played?
Yeah, South by Southwest, Fantastic Fest.
We went up to Montreal for Fantasia. We were at it in New York for the Friars Club. We had the FP screening, the Rolling Road Show thing at Fiestas. And it's played in a bunch of other film festivals that we didn't go to.
So, I mean, it's been playing around.
Yeah.
It's always fun just to see the movie with an audience, regardless.
Yeah. It's funny, like, the difference in audience where you'll have one, like, last night that really gets it and they're into it, and then you'll have the one where it's, like, kind of, like, 50 people are just, like...
Or, like, the test screening where 10 people walked out.
Yeah, the test screening was great.
That was rough.
Like, essentially, we had a test screening to see if we could even go to South by Southwest because our Paranormal Activity producers wanted to make sure that it was financially viable to go out there and all this. And so they got us a test screening where 10 people walked out. It got, like, a 52%, like, positive rating. And I remember the producer, Jason Blum, said, a studio would never release a movie with these numbers. And then we went to South by Southwest.
And now here we are.
I mean, yeah, how do you keep them from basing decisions on, like... This doesn't seem like a movie that's a test audience movie.
Well, that was our point.
Figured out,
you know, it was awesome to have a test done just to see the whole
thing. No, I mean, we still have to make a coffee table book of all those comments on that.
Oh yeah, that sounds
incredible.
Still, they're great. But you know, I mean, it just proved to us that this isn't like a wide release studio type movie, you know?
Which is so crazy.
It's the kind of movie that needs to be discovered by people.
Which is crazy. It's not a wide movie, but we're playing in, like, what, 26 cities?
Yep.
Which is nuts that it actually got to that point. I remember we were just hoping, God, I hope maybe we can play, like, one theater in LA or something. Yep. It was, like, our dream back when we were making it.
I mean, we were hoping we would get a DVD deal.
Yeah. And now it's, like, 26. It's ridiculous.
I like the comment cards as, like, a DVD extra. What was the funniest comment you got on...
Oh, Brandy, we should scan those and get them.
Yeah,
they're violent. That, and we should pick out the best YouTube comments from recently.
Jesus, right? Yeah, my question last night. I don't think I phrased it very well, but basically, what I meant about it seeming homemade is I was trying to get at It seems like you made it as a goof and, like, sort of, like, it was very spontaneous, but then at the same time, nothing in it looks, like, by accident.
I'm gonna say those costumes were not spontaneous.
Yeah. Like, how do you do something that's sort of... I mean, how do you keep the energy where it's sort of fun and something you do as a goof, but then still put that much work into it?
It was definitely homemade because we made it at our home.
Yeah.
Everything is done with such a... serious attention, but not, you know, and that's part of the whole joke for us. It's just to, because it is a joke ultimately, but it's like we throw all these characters into this whole world that's totally ridiculous. Yeah, if you just look at it, it really is just crazy and out of its mind. But we treat it as if it's just life or death, and it's just really serious.
Well, you have to go hard on it with everything; otherwise, it wouldn't be funny.
Yeah, it's just about as cohesive as a Transformers movie now. But there's a lot of attention put into the Transformers, and they had to put a lot of attention to this the same way.
Yeah,
just to make it ape shit.
We went to great lengths to try to make stuff look as, like, you know, legit as possible. Mm-hmm. You know, with Sarah and the
it's,
and the
it's definitely worked because all the comments, they're like so pissed off at Hollywood for bringing this movie out. Like, that's the joke.
Yeah.
Was to make it look like Hollywood released this.
And that always was
a portion of the movie.
You know, if there is any kind of parody involved in the movie, for us, it was just on the Hollywood system in general.
Yeah.
That, you know, you'd make, like, a Michael Bay movie or something that has so much attention put on something that's so ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Just the idea of being, like, if Jerry Bruckheimer were to make a Dance Dance movie, what would it be?
That's kind of what our whole approach was. You know,
I
kind of
like it
from the get-go.
What I'm most impressed about with these guys is that, you know, if that's the intention, you still have to be able to pull it off.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And to be able to pull it off and make what I consider, you know, a technically perfect independent film, is very impressive, you know, because, you know, you could say you want to pay attention to this detail or that detail, but to be able to do it and to be able to put together the whole thing and have it turn out the way that it did, you know, with everything, the music, the production, the costume, is a testament to the filmmaking, you know. Even if it is a big joke, it's still a great film.
Yeah.
I think we had a crew of, like, 10 people. Like, I don't know,
wasn't very big.
Like, it was not very big. I mean, it was just me and my department. It was pretty much like one person in every department, mm-hmm. maybe some like.
Yeah, and we had some PAs that ended up evolving into actually having jobs.
Jobs. Yeah.
I like the idea that it was so. I mean, it's such like a self-contained. World that you made, but then like there's a couple scenes like at the gas station where there's kind of the idea that maybe the rest of the world is going on completely normal while all this is happening. I mean, and that's almost even better. Like, what was the idea?
It's just the idea being that everyone in these small towns, it's like this. They just become like this post-apocalyptic bunker where it's just like they're all crazy people and they're just the whole idea is to make everybody delusional.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, you know,
and that's why with JTRA, like at the beginning, like I speak like one of those thugs, and then when I come. And I'm totally in the world. And a year later, I've been out of it, you know, cutting logs and shit. And I come back and I've seen the actual world. And it's like, what the fuck are you guys doing?
Yeah,
like, people are ridiculous now.
Because we never really intended this movie to seem dystopian or apocalyptic.
It just kind of came off
just weird.
It is also what we had too: piles of trash.
But we also made it like. You know, the craziness really only comes out at night in the world, too. You know, like when he's walking around town, he doesn't have the big vest on. It's like they have their superhero get-ups that they put on when they actually go to the tournament.
Well, they have their their battle gear.
Which is why in the last scene, it's so funny to see them with those costumes on in the daylight. Oh, it's so ridiculous looking.
Okay, so what's the, is there a story behind the eye patch? Is it a trademark, medical necessity, both?
It's both of those things.
Okay. and then... I was really interested in Lee Del Massey. Did you see that character in him? Because I mean,
no.
Like, I was there with people that had seen the movie like two or three times and were like talking to that guy and had no idea.
He's just like the most ill-tempered. Like, he's just like, you know, a chill, you know, guy. And like, you would never think in a million years it's like that guy can pull out Mr. T. And I didn't even know he could do it either, because like we made these shorts when I was in high school. It was basically to start out, it's like this joke him and I had when we were in high school, and I was like, come on, I've seen you do this before. And he's like, I don't know. And he was scared of it, and like he started doing it, and like he did it great like back then. And I remember like he was just like so embarrassed of doing it when he first did it. He like almost didn't want to talk to me again.
Yeah, I feel like it was his performance when I saw the shorts in the first place.
Yeah, that's what did it. Yeah.
Like, really made it work.
It's probably all his fault that this movie ended up actually getting to where it was, him being so good at that character.
Yeah. Well, we don't know how he's natural.
Yeah.
It's like a combination of like five different dudes from the FP.
Yeah, because it's definitely... It's like, it's like three to five guys that him and I knew and didn't really see eye to eye with in high school. And it just is them.
Mutated into one character.
Yeah. Which is just his name, which is Lee. L-E-E.
Right. Yeah.
So, like, you guys, your parents are filmmakers, I read in your bio. So, I mean, what's the, how did you guys end up in Fraser Park? Growing up.
Well, you know, our dad does special effects, mm-hmm. and like most either effects guys or stuntmen in Hollywood, they tend to sort of like abandon the city and just run to the outskirts.
He moved to Kern County. It's right on the LA County Kern County line, because he does special effects and he has magazines where he stores explosives, and it's much easier to do that in Kern County, but be close to LA County.
So he needs his land and he needs all the stuff to store, and he also wants to be able to, you know, carry his concealed weapon.
He loves kind of just staying out in the wilderness.
And he's also kind of a hoarder, so that's where all like the trash and weird old cars and all that stuff came. We didn't pull anything in. Like,
yeah, we wrote the movie knowing we've got like a pile of trash over there. We've got like all these machines, and that's how it ended up becoming so post-apocalyptic, because our dad just has so much machinery and random old
pieces of steel and just
Sorry, did you grow up I mean when near each other or did they just find how did you guys find
we don't
each
even
other
know Art.
Oh really?
we still don't know each other. I'm still trying to figure out how to get back with these guys. I met Brandon on Crank High Voltage,
mm-hmm.
and I remember during the rap party he came up to me, and we had some rapport on set, and, mm-hmm. and we were chatting, and he told me about this little project that he was thinking about starting up with his brother and his sister. And you know, I said, sure, I might be interested in it. So sure enough, a couple of months later, he gives me a call, and he sent me the script. And I remember reading the script for the first time, and I looked at it, and I was like, oh my God, these people are insane. I can't believe this is an actual script, and they wrote this. And what we ended up shooting, and what you see in the movie, was word for word, basically everything that was on the page. Mm-hmm. So I met Brandon on Crank High Voltage, and he was fortunate enough that he offered me this.
I always sort of wondered, too, because, I mean, you know, granted, we knew each other, but we didn't know each other really well even then. And you know, I just sort of coldly hand him the script that he probably goes, "Oh my God, who is this guy?"
Well, it's just scary too. It's like, because it can be a very offensive movie and script if you want to be, and just to hand that to somebody you don't really know.
Yeah. It always kind of came with the we probably did. I send you the short too that we had made.
You did not send it.
Not.
Oh wow.
You sent it late to the trailer you got shot.
All right.
I took a look at that. Just the first 10 minutes of.
How are you even here?
I think your facial expressions made like half the movie for me, to be honest. Like just the reactions, like at certain. I don't know. Like, I can't describe
it. Together, right?
Yeah.
The heart and soul, the whole thing.
It's funny with this character because it's different than the other characters I've played. This character, something about it really allowed all that to come out in me. Mm-hmm. It really allowed that side of my personality to come out. I'm from New York originally, mm-hmm. so that's why a lot of the lingo and a lot of the way that he talks, KCDC talks, comes pretty second nature to me. I mean, that is a part of who I am in a way, mm-hmm. you know. And, you know, just the way it was written and the way it was put together, it was really, really something that let that come out of me. And I think the facial expressions and everything, all the physical stuff, just kind of went along with that, you know, just went along with the dialogue.
Going back to you guys growing up in Fraser Park, I'm guessing, like, there weren't a lot of other, like, children of people that work on movies that
there
you grew
are.
Up?
There are, actually, because a lot of people just... out there. One of our good friends, his dad has an animal training company. He, like, they bring all the animals. Mm-hmm. He's got, like, camels and lions and tigers and stuff just, like, on his property, too. And he went to school with his kids. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a lot of movie people. Just because it's a commute from L.A., mm-hmm. there's a lot of people that just don't want to be in the city and live up there.
Well, they can store their trailers and their equipment and everything because there's more property.
But that's, like, more than an hour outside.
No,
hour
away.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, hour and change, depending on the time of day, but whatever. It's...
Yeah.
It's
but it's like driving anywhere else.
It's like driving from Santa Monica to, you know,
anywhere.
Yeah. But I mean, in terms of just like kids up there making their own movies, I mean, it was kind of just us and you guys, you know, you and your friends. And that all just evolved into this. I mean, and part of it is like I went off to, you know, I'm 5 years older than Jason, and I went off to film school. So while I was making shorts and doing stuff, Jason was keeping up his end, making shorts with all of his friends in high school.
He was definitely keeping up on something.
and then we were just always making movies. Mm-hmm. And we ultimately...
It's just funny that we picked this one because there's literally like 20 other shorts with like ideas of equally crazy things that are out there. And this was the one that got developed into the full movie for some reason.
So you seem like the serious sibling in my picking it up on that correctly or no?
Am I the serious sibling?
he's turned into that way.
I'd say he's the more politically correct.
Yeah, he's definitely the most politically correct one of us, for sure.
So you guys made the short, and then how did you take it from being a short to like a full movie?
Well, I mean, the short was just the first. From when I say no, I'll never play BB Revelation again and slam my hand down, that's the end of the short. Mm-hmm. Like, the short was just the James Bond opener in the first 10 minutes, and then...
Yeah, and because there always
we always had the script.
There always was a script.
That's why everyone's like, how can they stretch this thing out from that short? And it's like, there was always a script that was...
Again, the joke.
But even after we had made that initial short, we went through and just sort of ripped the script apart and put it back together again, but that opening scene stayed the same, basically.
Yeah.
That was one thing that seemed to just work so well. I mean, really, we needed the first short that was the original opening to kind of show it to people.
Because you give them the script and they're like, what the
hell?
Did they do the art thing? What the hell is this?
Yeah. And
I loved it.
Can we ultimately use it to find, you know, what little cash we got to make the movie? You know, I mean, just we just needed more money to be able to make it. And so we did, and we just went for it.
Are you not supposed to say how much it costs to make?
I don't think we can release that yet.
Well, I think I did last night.
I think that was dropped on the world.
Yeah. Well,
I think it was dropped, but, you know.
We're not supposed to talk about it.
Right? And it's not
a number
that we come out and discuss.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't know, when is it safe for us to ever talk about that?
Or is it?
It's not a question I can answer, but I would like to.
So, not right now.
That's definitely not right now. Okay.
What's the reaction been? Like, has there been a reaction from, like, industry people? I mean, what's the...
Yeah. Stop.
Not true.
When we tried to take this thing around to like agencies and stuff, and so many times they watched 10 minutes and like, yeah, get out of here. We have a lot of black clients, and we can't be associated with this.
I take that back.
But outside of that, there have been people that we've shown it to that are friends of ours who were even producers who are people that we might end up working with again, have come out of it saying, look, you know, it's unique, it's crazy, it's weird, but the stuff that they're the most impressed by is just that the quality of the acting in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Just that everyone really seems to know their character and that everyone really feels, I don't know, I guess, directed, which is something I guess that people are looking for. I mean, that's the only reason, like, we haven't really shown it to a lot of people also. You know, this is just a few of our friends that have seen it and come and talk to us about it, but...
I think it's a testament to the filmmaking too, because that's, you know, I mean, as directors or as filmmakers, if you don't cast your filmmaker, that's half of it right there, finding the right
people. 90% of it's directing is casting. After that, you can just kind of go on autopilot. The thing is, I mean, you can't pull a performance out of somebody who doesn't have it. And that's just pretty much how it is. They either have it or they don't. Like, if you cast it right and they have it there, it's gonna make your job so much easier on set.
And I kind of
Art, sense that. God, he was a nightmare. No, Art was super easy. He got it every day. And...
Awesome.
But like, even while we were filming it, you know, with the other actors, you knew it was a good performance. You know, while you were working with them, and then also going back and, you know, seeing, going behind it and watching it while they were shooting it, and then I didn't have a chance to see any of the dailies at night. But when I was watching the performances on the screen, you just saw these amazing performances coming out of these actors, and you knew that it was going to come together even at that point.
Lee, especially, it's so funny to see Lee hanging out at, like, in his full character outfit and everything.
Yeah, like when he turns it on, and it's like,
he tenses up his whole body.
His whole body goes in a different posture, and it's
crazy.
Like,
what was your, what was the idea behind the costumes in general? I mean, I really loved the high water pants, just the way he sort of walks around.
It's pretty obvious. Like,
that was his Martin McFly get up, though.
Yeah.
That was street clothes, man. There's a lot of different ways to answer that, but the boots basically started all of it.
Mm-hmm.
We had the boots, like, since Jason was in high school. The boots that my dad bought off of some, like, other crazy old man on the mountain. Mm-hmm. So the boots were in the original shorts that he made, like, in high school. And so then it sort of turned into this weird, like, Devil Dragon Warrior situation. And there were two gangs and there were two teams. So I was like, well, let's base it on the Civil War. So if you watch it, you can see that the two rival gangs are based in colors and flags and everything, references from the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
So that sort of infiltrated the whole thing on top of, like, we have no money, so let's pull out anything that's just interesting and cool and kind of fits in this weird future of the trashy 80s world. And
a lot of thrift store runs.
Okay. A lot of thrift store. There was a point where we emptied out because we had a storage container there, and so it was all these just bags and bags of clothes that I had as costumes or clothes. They're clothes from when we were little kids that are on actors. Like, even, like, KCDC. I don't know if I ever told you this, actually. KCDC wears a lot of shirts that have ducks after his duck speech.
Mm-hmm.
He wears a lot of clothes that have ducks on them after that. And there's one sweater that's, like, this white sweater that's really small, and I cut the sleeves off of it, and he wears it in one of the training montages, and it's a duck that has pants for some reason, and the pants are down, and just the shit happens over the duck's area, which is a sweater that I bought when I was 10 years old at a yard sale. Why? I don't know. Why do we still have it? I don't know.
And that thing explains the FP a lot.
The duck speech is my favorite scene of the movie.
It's amazing. So it was a lot of piecing together stuff that we had, and a fair amount of the design, especially all of Lee's jumpsuits, the majority of them were made, especially his final battle jumpsuit is completely custom made from the ground up. It's just whatever fabric I had that I could put together that was in that color realm and that made sense for the 245 team.
Mm-hmm.
There are probably four layers of shoulder pads in that jumpsuit. Like, it builds up his shoulders. It's crazy. And then he puts it on and it turns into a raging bull. It's so funny to watch his posture change when he put everything on.
Yeah, it's nice, because, well, you know,
and then when he does it, he's just like, hey, guys.
And then when he does it, hey, guys.
But in the dressing room and stuff, there were sketches, Sarah's sketches of the different characters and of the different concepts that she had for the costumes, like the jumpsuits and all that.
By dressing room art means the top floor of the bar,
top edge of the bar
that was unfinished with rafters and no drywall.
This is true. But
holes that led to certain death 20 feet below.
This is true. But all the concepts, you know, she had sketched them all out, and to see them actually come to life with what she put together was just really amazing.
Well, and it's really helpful for the actors, too, because it something that is so extreme, especially with the dialogue and just how weird and how different it is. If you match that with the costuming, it changes them. It helps, especially with Lee.
Yeah.
If Lee didn't have costumes like that, he would not be convincing in what he was doing. Mm-hmm. You can feel it too. Like, and when he puts it on, and he told me, he's like, "Yeah, I turned into like different."
And I've always thought costumes are so important in movies.
Really,
I think
important.
A lot of people just throw it away, but it's like, you know, as being an actor, it's like you put on a cool costume or something where you feel like awesome, and you just feel it. I don't know what it is, like, as opposed to being in like a lame costume, something that's like fitted and like you feel like a superhero, you just become it's really weird.
Big Bang Theory or something. I tried to watch that and it's like, this looks like a bunch of nerds that grew up in a Mervyn's or something. It's like the weirdest costuming I've ever seen. Like, they're all washed and clean. And
that's
like,
why when people are like, you know, well, how does he do it when he puts on that Batman costume? I bet he feels like fucking badass.
Mm-hmm.
There is something to be said about putting on, and you can tell when you're in fittings too, you can tell when you've hit the right thing because there's always a change. There's always a shift. You can always feel the energy change when you put on the right thing.
Well, this has just felt like, I mean, the details were sort of what kept the whole thing moving. Like, all the little touches were basically, like, what drove the whole thing, it seemed like.
It's one of those things where it's like, you know that if you just make a movie just on Dance Dance, it's going to wear thin after a while, so you have to have so many minute details and so much going on to kind of, like, keep it interesting.
Our production designer really helped us out with that, too. Tyler.
The cage match is all him.
He really, he basically moved in and just lived there for, you know, a couple months before we even started shooting and was just building stuff.
It was him and Leah and I just building sets up in the barn.
And he'd find all the little bits and pieces. I mean, he's the one who put little, like, you know, floating ducks in the moon pool in the base.
Yeah.
You know,
he built the cave in the moon pool to start with.
Yeah, he built
that.
Whole
was crazy.
Thing.
Was Stacy's trailer? Did you have to move any of that crap in, or was it just
was,
sort of
yeah,
there?
Yeah, Tyler and I did.
Yeah,
that
and
too,
actually,
we worked together.
We did
too.
We did too good of a job because people would stop by periodically, like every 10 minutes, and be like, "Yard sale!"
Yeah,
and come wandering in, like looking at things, picking them up, and like asking us how much. We're like, "No, we're shooting here."
I mean, that was like waist high of just stuff.
If you can see, it's an outdoor living room. It's like there's couches there and everything.
Yeah.
At one point, Stacy has like a torch. I guess she didn't. She just took pictures with it. But there's actually like torched into the outdoor carpet. Fuck you, Dad. There's like knives in this broken TV. There's candle wax everywhere. There's lace and like weird flowers and like we really.
But again, just paying attention to just random details.
Yeah.
And that he was. Well, I mean, we were all about that, but like. We also made a deal with the local thrift store. They would just let us take whatever we wanted.
As long as we don't get
it
back.
We didn't have to get back. We're like, we can. They're like, "You can take anything, put it in the truck. That's great. You guys are making a movie." And we're like, "Yeah, we'll bring it back." And we're like, "Don't even worry about it." Like, no, we really
want
it.
Well, it was all stuff that they found in the trash anyway.
Yeah. But I love what, like, Tyler, like, the whole reason the cage match wasn't originally in the script until pre-production when Tyler were building the foundation. And he was, like, sitting there looking around, and he was like, we had this piece of fence from like Mortal Kombat that Dad had with all these pipes on it, and then Tyler's just like, you know, we could probably do a cage match. Like, that'd be cool. No way, we're not gonna be able to do this. Like, and then I come back and like he's got a cage hanging, and I'm like, holy shit, we can actually do this.
You can see the old dead motorcycle that's the counterweight for actually rising in the background. That was really how it operated.
And then Brian Goddard, who was Sugar Nigga, he was an extra because all of our extras were just, it would be us or whoever. Like, I mean,
maximum of eight extras.
Yeah, Lee is an extra several times in the background, just like putting on costumes. We'd have like eight people maybe sometimes to be extras, so they'd be dressed one way over here,
so
these eight guys, and we flip the coverage around, it'd be the same guys but different costumes.
Yeah, the background, that was my other favorite thing, was just watching people in the background, like the random people in the background.
Yeah. And
on that note, how do you convince the person to be like, okay, you're gonna be like the background boob lady?
Oh, she was hired to do that.
Okay.
Yeah, that was a joke that we always wanted specifically, yeah. so we needed to get her.
Yeah, that's one way to lock down.
So, like, you put out a casting call, like, specifically for that, or what do you
do? Well, we had a friend.
Hey, my porn star friend, do you want to do this?
Okay.
Okay, see you later.
She's in that biz.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, so it was easy.
Yeah.
Well, it just made sense.
Right.
Are you guys working on anything together going forward, or future
we are,
collaborations?
Yeah. We definitely have a few things we're working on.
A couple things we're cooking around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, ultimately just trying to get this done and out too, yeah, at the same time.
Get this 8-year saga out of the way and yeah. Hopefully the next one will never take that long.
Yeah. Although everything that we talk about doing, we also love, it seems like the FP2 is the thing that seems to be the most adorable society excited.
I would say that's probably what will happen first is an FP2. Just because I've waited so long to do the FP2 at this point, it's like, yeah, the FP1's just coming out, but right. We've been waiting like 3.5 years to do the sequel.
Right, because we've always wanted to make the Rambo 2.
Yeah, because the reason, like, I mean, for me at least, why I originally came up with the idea with the movie is, like, I wanted to make the sequel more than the first one. So it's kind of like I just want to get this one out of the way so we can get to the one that I always wanted to make, our Empire Strikes Back of the FP series.
So what's the basic premise of the sequel?
I mean, we can't say too much, but we go to Hong Kong.
Okay. All right.
Why not?
HK.
Yeah. Mm. But, you know. Can't get to and J-Tro meets up with his father Nitro. So
okay.
Shit gets double serious and double hot.
Right.
Are those nicknames basically that did same, you have? Did you make those up for the movie or were they?
Well, the nicknames.
Yeah.
The J-Tro nickname I actually had in high school because it was like the J-Lo time, mm-hmm. and then people would just call me J-Tro, and that nickname led to me creating all the other names, because in the original shorts it would all just be like my buddies that being in high school. So KCDC was my buddy Kyle, he liked ACDC, so he became KCDC. I was J-Tro because Jason Trost. LWE was just Lee, and BLT just came out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
Just
funny.
That was just funny because after that point I was like, that'd be funny, just a bacon lettuce tomato guy.
And Stacy.
Well, Stacy was
Lacey
it? Stacy. Well, Stacy, Lacey, Macy. Stacy's a play on the name of what the main character's name in OC was. I don't even remember what her name is. It's been so long since I made fun of it. But
was that Marissa?
Or was her friend? It was somebody. I know. I don't even know. I can't even remember. But I know that Stacy came from an OC reference, and I can't even tell you what it was now. It's been so long.
I can't remember either.
The entire like short, the first short, and even part of the movie, which you may not even know, the structure is based off of the OC mm-hmm. pilot. The whole thing, the guy coming to town, the girl living next door, and then him wanting to fight for her, it's straight out of OC.
Where one guy's from Chino, and he's tough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but right. This guy's from the 242, he's been cutting logs.
Yep.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
He's picking it up now.
His mind just
trying to
blew
think.
Up.
Yeah, all so. Right.
Unfortunately, nobody's seen an OC episode in about a decade, so
it's fine.
I guess we're clear.
They do. It's really funny.
I mean, when you combine all those elements, when you look at the detail and the crazy way that the script came together and you put on the costume and you show up on that set with everything there, the ducks in the pool and all the stuff in the yard, you're like, oh my God, this is an unbelievable world that's been created. It's this other world that is in the FB, but it's not the FB.
When you get down to it, it's really not that unique. I always figured if you steal enough stuff from a lot of different things, it just becomes your own. And that's kind of how it
very came
about. Like, nobody would put that many things in the blender. Well, we did.
Well, we did.
So how many more times do you guys have to do this, like, show the movie and then do like a bunch of.
I don't know, Brandon. That's a great question.
That's a brand question. I don't know. A couple?
We were going to do it hopefully in LA and Pure because we're opening up March 16th. And then we have so many markets regionally. So obviously we want to spread the word as much as possible as we can for a movie.
This is going to sound so awesomely weird on my voice recorder. The background whispering person. After a while, after like an hour or two of interviews, your brain just like rot? Like, how do you...
No, I'm ready.
Okay. It's
all right.
Fun.
All right.
It's
fine.
I'm going to blast.
It's fun having it behind us because a lot of the interviews we'd have to do is like when like distribution wasn't locked down, we don't know if it's going out. This is finally the first set of interviews we've done. Like, we actually know the movie's coming out in X amount of cities.
And we just saw a screening of people were excited about it. And like, it seems like the interviewers have actually seen it, mm-hmm. so they're excited about it too.
Yeah.
Like, there's some interviews where people are not so
very excited. Yeah.
What's
it like working with so and so?
Well, I don't know.
What's it like working at a high altitude?
Well, you know, the air is different.
I know. So is it, like, if when you do make a sequel, do you think it'll be easier, or is it just going
to
be, like...
It has to be. Nothing can be harder than this movie was.
It won't be.
I mean, you still have to, like...
We'll still find a way to make it ambitious enough, too.
Yeah, it'll be easier, though, because... It'll be easier because we're definitely all better at our job now at this point than we made this movie, and we have so many more connections and so much more help that there's no way it can be as hard as this one. No way will we be all bankrupt living in a barn while we shoot the sequel.
Yeah, that's true.
That's never gonna happen. I'm never gonna be eating like Easy Mac and hot dogs and like having craft service steal like the spoons and stuff from us at night because we can't afford to have them. So I have to eat things with my hands. Like, that's never gonna happen again. Now I can actually buy my own spoon
scorpions.
If I have to.
Scorpions in the shower?
Yeah, getting stung by scorpions in the shower. There's no way, man.
At least we'll have a place to sleep, probably.
Yeah, I mean, it really was like a weird little camp.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was just like camp, though. But it's like after like the first week or two, it's like, yeah, this is a blast. And then you're 3 months into camp, and it's like, God, when are the parents coming? When are they taking me home? It sucks.
Dusty, hot.
Because then after you get done shooting the movie, it's not like, oh, it's like, damn it, now I have a week of physical labor at camp, breaking everything down and wrapping it.
I mean, just working all. I mean, working all the time. It's like even after we were done filming, because we were staying at the location, we still had to do stuff. I mean, I still had to make costumes or do whatever, or help build sets or whatever it was. Like we were.
It's like we'd shoot for like 10-12 hours a day with people, but we'd have to be building things before and after everyone left to get the sets ready.
I mean,
we
specifically designed like 5-day weeks so we could shoot during the week, and then we would have the weekend to just work and build stuff while everybody else was away.
The weekend that was the hardest was when Tyler and I had to build Trailer Henge.
Oh, wow.
When it's like, okay, we're shooting on Monday, and everybody just all of a sudden, screen doors are swinging back and forth on Friday night, and Tyler and I are just up there looking at it. It's empty. Mm. Just empty ground from what you saw with Trailer Henge. It's like,
yeah, it's just a flat pad.
Fuck.
We had to move everything.
How the hell are we going
to
do this?
You're getting a lot of inside scoop here, but I will say this, as an actor from Los Angeles, the feeling that I got was a completely professional and well-run set.
Well, thanks, Art.
We weren't exposed to all this stuff that was going on, so to hear it was truly fantastic, because we didn't know that they were doing it. We knew that they were working at night and on the weekends and putting all this stuff together, but they took care of us. They got us back. They got us up so we could just give the best performances that we could give. And it was to hear this now is just amazing.
Everyone's like, how'd you do your character this and that? Like, you know, you're like morose, you don't say a lot. And this, I'm like, I'm not acting in that movie.
Tired
I was just being tired as hell, beating the shit. Like, there's no acting.
You had a nail through your foot at one point?
Oh, yeah, a nail went through my foot. I forgot. That was pre-production.
Yeah, that sucked. It was horrible.
I got a tetanus shot. Oh, man, that sucked.
That was good. Tyler got a
broke my ankle, got my eyebrow split open, broke a finger.
Man,
that was a rough one.
Anyway, it was fun.
Yeah. All right.
Had a good time.
I think I'm out of questions.